Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome to another episode of the Ruby After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are talking about Volume 5, Episode 3, Unforeseen Complications. We've got a lot of stuff to cover tonight. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Got the remix there.
You know what? It's funny because I dance to every opening and nobody sees it because it always cuts away. But like when it stops in the middle there, I just kind of have to stop like you're doing a robot.
You just gave them fuel for an April Fool's Day prank
where they
play the intro and just stick on you dancing.
Oh no. And then I'll be stuck in an endless loop.
Yeah.
we have some branding to show off though. That's why we play it.
In case you missed the icon, the slate, the name of the channel, and everything else, you are watching / listening to AfterBuzz TV.
Indeed! Hello there, Rooster Teeth fans! Tonight we are talking about Volume 5, Episode 3 of Ruby, Unforeseen Complications. Let me not waste any time in introducing our fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
Hi everybody, I'm Mark B. Donica. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, the Rooster Teeth site, most places. Just Google Mark B. Donica. You'll find me. I make stupid stuff. That's Katie Cullen.
Hi, you can follow me all over the social medias at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. And then there's that human being.
Hi, I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Manguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Sadly, Patrick Dees could not be here with us tonight, so you guys can tweet at him at P to the Dees on the Twitters. And guys, you should definitely give a special shout out to one of our other co-hosts, Stacey Shuttleworth on Twitter at Stacey Shuttles.
Wow.
Because it is her anniversary today, so you guys should be wishing the special couple a very, very happy anniversary, because they are wonderful and adorable, and all of their pictures online are so, so cute. You will not regret it.
Happy big two to the big two.
Yeah, happy anniversary, you guys. I hope you guys are having a fabulous day.
I hope so, too.
It's fine.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm okay? Just verklempt. It's fine.
Is there
fine.
Water in there?
No.
Okay. Perfect.
It's never water, Mark.
We're having a really good time tonight.
So, guys, this episode, I really enjoyed, a lot of exposition-heavy episodes. Like, we're all anime fans. Exposition-heavy episodes can be really hit or miss. For me, I was very much a fan of this episode. I thought, like, all of the information flowed really well. I didn't feel bogged down by any of the information given to us. Let's start with Mark. How did you guys feel about what could have been a very daunting episode to get through?
First thing I do want to say, though, is for those of you who are watching for the first time or joining us for the first time in a long time, we are only talking about one episode. We're not talking about episode 4. We are talking about the public releases as per Rooster Teeth's guidelines when it comes to coverage and recaps and reviews and things of that nature. So please leave your spoilers in your pocket. Don't put them outside of your pocket.
Please
save them for next week.
Yeah, save them for next week.
We beg of you, please, for the love of God, no spoilers, guys. Just be courteous to the people around you.
Just be a nice person. In terms of your question, thank you for asking the question. But second of all, I like how it everything was sort of evened out with information that they gave us previously. They gave us in World of Remnants last year and the year before when it came to the Tale of the Four Maidens, or when it came to the history of all of the continents. So when Ilya, and not necessarily just in the room with our heroes, but when Ilya talks about the history of the Dust Wars and the companies using the Faunus as slaves and all that stuff is something you go, oh, I do know that because they told me that. It wasn't something where it's, here's information you're going to need to know next episode. It's stuff that we can retain, and now we're seeing that come into fruition. I liked that. I definitely don't think we were bogged down by information. I'm really sad. I hope that ultimately we will see Oz's big giant head. But I thought for what we got, it was a good start.
That's a semblance. It's going to happen, guys. Mm-hmm. Katie.
This episode was honestly a little bit of a nostalgia trip for me, because I think Mark hit the nail on the head for one, before I start talking about nostalgia, about exposition that didn't feel heavy and that built on what we'd gotten before in previous seasons. Like, this was very well done. But in terms of nostalgia, I've had Yu-Gi-Oh! On the brain recently. Found someone who's doing some really funny recaps. So I just got, it's just kind of been, you know, 15 years ago was when it came out in America. So then we have a full-on Yu-Gi-Oh! Moment here, and I just about lost my mind. Head tilted back, hair going, everything's glowing, and suddenly there's someone else like, oh yeah, no, we had a Yu-Gi-Oh! Moment.
It's a young boy and an older man sharing a body.
And the Millennium Kane.
Yeah. I mean,
were you expecting to hear a dun 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 dun? I would watch that TV program.
We are! I watched it 15 years ago, and I'm watching it again now.
Oh,
you've fallen right into our trap card.
Activated my trap.
I was just about to ask.
Magical cylinder.
We already know that the world of Remnant happens to have card games. They've used that joke before. God dang it.
I regret nothing. It all just makes me extremely happy.
Before I forget, we are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RWBYABTV. So if you guys have any other Yu-Gi-Oh! References or things that you want to add to the conversation, we will definitely be keeping an eye out for it there. These two lovely humans also got you guys on the live chat. And again, no spoilers for next week. Be cool.
We do have Jeff in chat saying Salem's Red Eyes Black Dragon.
I mean, that could very well be the big bad for the series finale when we finally go to the Dragon Continent. What?
Crow's Dark Magician.
Hey!
Oh! It's the reliable card that he uses in a pinch. It's got his damn
okay,
Dark Magician.
Reliable.
Fair. Well, there was a couple of times when, like, no, listen to me, Dark Magician. Like that sort of crap would happen, and it would be like change of heart or whatever. I don't know.
Oh my God, what's Ironwood though?
Summon Skull.
I would assume Jean would be the Celtic Guardian.
That's good.
Just off the top of my head,
actually, my knee jerk reaction was
Feral Imp. Karibo.
Karibo. Yeah, no, John is Karibo because he's got crazy explosive powers that you never really know about, but someone's got to believe in him.
All
no,
right.
I was thinking like Celtic Guardian for Leo because every time he shows up, he's useless.
He's sacrificed. We're getting way too far up into the weeds, but we want more Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan art.
We need to not
nothing.
We need to not go down this deep dark rabbit hole any further
way
than
too
we already
late.
Have. So let's bring it back a little bit before we get to the Yu-Gi-Oh!-esque plotline with Oscar and Ozpin. I want to talk a little bit about the Belladonna press conference that they kind of hold regarding the State of the Union of the White Fang. Mm-hmm. And guys, I don't normally like to get political on our show in particular, but this show tackles a lot of political issues, including issues of racism. There are a lot of things that, you know, are taken from the real world that end up in the art we consume. And we as viewers and as people who look at our art very critically also look at it through the view of our own culture. And right now is a very interesting time to be alive. So I just wanted to point out that I'm really kind of grateful, actually, that we are talking about this particular episode the one year after the 2017 elections to the day, because there are some things that get brought up that kind of maybe the people of Mistral need to get woke a little bit. That's all I'm saying, but We'll talk about it. So yes, the Belladonnas have this evidence against Adam Torres, and they're trying to show that he is indeed planning a coup against Sienna Khan. Unbeknownst to them, she is already super, super dead. So
here's what I'm wondering about this, because we theorized last week with Sienna Khan dead that it would take the wind out of their sails in terms of releasing this information. And it might, but we've also cast aspersions on Adam's character, which we all know is rotten to the core anyway, before the news about Sienna Khan's death ever got out. So him, so Gira standing up with the scroll and saying, hey, Adam is planning a coup. He's planning on overthrowing Sienna Khan. And then eventually the news is going to get out that Sienna Khan is dead and Adam is the leader. it's not going to be as seamless a coup as Adam would have hoped because they have this information out there. Even if he's already got a cover story, even if he's already in place, there's still doubt about, well, Gira said this and Gira's never really led us wrong. So who do we believe?
And while I agree with that, Adam is in control of the story, or the people that, because the Skrull network is down, there is no, while there is like some sort of connection, and it seems to be on like a country by country basis, and especially not in I even forgot what our original academy was called. Why
Beacon.
That beacon? It's because now that tower has fallen,
it's gone, it's dead, it's best forgotten,
it's all dead. Goodbye, everybody.
But Kevin's still there.
I mean, never forget, in spirit. Hashtag never forget. But so with this, I do agree that at least from a world news perspective, that isn't going to get out. But Ilya standing up there and all of the people out there with their scrolls recording it, that's it for Menagerie. That's it. The important news is here's what the White Fang really stands for. And blame and referring to the election, people always stick with the negative. They for whatever reason, it just speaks to a primal instinct of no, we need to be the better people, quote people, you know. But so with this, I think the message is now going to be spread, albeit slower than if all of the networks were up, around Menagerie, and you could see with how the two robed individuals whose name I know one of them is named Fennec
and Karnak.
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 I have a prediction here in this envelope.
I'm just pulling anything out. Let's be real. It's Fennec and something that starts with a C. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Sketchy and sleazy. Got it.
There you go. So the fact that those two look real proud of themselves.
Yeah.
And the whole counter argument was, hey, shut up. You know, it doesn't look too great. Thanks, Sun, you big, dumb idiot. But
I
you
mean,
gorgeous
did the
idiot.
Best he could.
You're going to do great.
I also think it's hilarious that it took security, like, forever before going, we should detain her.
We should do something. Should we do something? We should do something. What I'm interested in is that everyone was really, really behind Gira. Everyone was ready to go until he said, we need to go there and help them. And then I watched one of the NPCs who was standing there like this real happy. Slowly put her arms down. Like, okay, yeah. And then Ilya comes out with, the White Fang will fight for you, mm-hmm. allowing the armchair activists to remain armchair.
Can't
access.
Someone else do it?
Hashtag White Fang.
But I also get, like, most of the people around here aren't trained warriors. They're farmers, they're merchants, they're people going around their everyday lives, and their leader has basically just said, hey, let's go fight a war against monsters and evil people. And they all kind of went, you want me to what? Is this a draft? Where are we going?
The added layer on top of that is to defend humanity, humans. You know, the people who are actively racist and discriminatory towards us mm-hmm. on basically every level imaginable.
So there's, go ahead.
But then that's also the other degree of the White Fang, you know, mm-hmm. is they're also racist to a different race of anima folk. To an extreme degree, and I think Gira was going to not just the public, but also the people within the White Fang that may have some form of training, are masked, speared gentlemen and ladies, if you will, and maybe not something, but just showing more than showing thoughts and prayers,
yeah,
and actually doing
yeah.
something about it, even if it's a small militia. I don't know if it's an army. How can you fit? How many boats do they have? How many armies can they fit on said boat or boats, and make it to Mistral and Haven in enough time? Let's just get like a strike team or something, just to be like, Menagerie's with you, and we stand with you, so that we can get that sweet moment in the finale when it's like a small group of people against an army of the White Fang, and then half of them go, this is stupid, and then join, and then that army becomes bigger, and then it's like a sweet hero hurrah moment.
Oh,
but,
dude, I would love that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or potentially like a Lord of the Rings moment where like a small group of huntsmen are going up against Adam, and then all of a sudden there's a boat filled with faunus from Menagerie. Only
here.
not ghosts like in that movie, but it was still great.
It's a good reference.
So I love the idea of, like, you know, actually doing something and, oh no, that means there are consequences for me as a person. There goes all of my support. There goes all the wins out. It's so much easier to stand for something in principle than to actually take action.
I have to do something?
I know, right? Ooh.
Yeah. Can I just get one of those, like, ribbons?
I'll change my profile pic. And to be fair, a lot of us are guilty of this. A lot of us are like, hey, I'm going to stand in solidarity online, not in person. Mm. I will use a hashtag as opposed to like actually donating to a worthy cause. And there's nothing wrong with spreading awareness, and it is important. But
you can't stop there.
Just remember that, like, hey, it's important to actually do stuff and go out and vote and all that fun stuff.
And just support your fellow man, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
Just be a good person. It's not hard.
And I mean, in terms of real world stuff, yesterday was a real good indication that when you go and do things, you can accomplish things.
And, oh, go ahead.
No, yeah, it's just a hand gesture of agreement.
Looking at this crowd, you know, it basically sums up a very old saying, you know, for evil to succeed, all good men have to, you know, all that has to happen is for good men to...
In order for evil to succeed, good men do nothing.
Must do nothing. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I really appreciated this episode. But yeah, we can kind of talking about Lady Ilya's side of things... Oh my gosh, Sheremy killed that delivery.
Yes!
Kudos to Sheremy Lee, because holy cow, that was incredible. I can't wait to see more of her performances, this character, because she's freaking killing it. It's fantastic. I do want to ask a question of the panel, though. After Gira gave his speech, he was going to let Blake tell her story before Lady Ilya interrupted, and that's when the outburst came. Blake never got to say anything as far as we could see. Do we think, and maybe this is better saved for predictions, but I'm going to ask now, do we think that Blake actually getting to tell the story is what will eventually inspire Mistral to take up arms?
Yes. Yes, because it's one thing to be like, oh, well, this is a horrible thing, and we all heard about it, and it's another thing to hear from someone who was, I was there, my friends were killed or bodily harmed, some of them directly by Adam Taurus. This is what happened. This is what he said. These were the actions. Like,
this is what he did.
Somebody said in chat, and I'm sorry, it's been moving so fast I didn't have a chance to see, but that her story features a human saving her life from Adam Taurus, who is going to kill her.
This is very true.
So that, and I also think, yes, and I think that's exactly why Ilya chose then to do it, because she knew the importance of that firsthand account of, and of how persuasive Blake can be just by her very nature when she's impassioned about something. She's a future leader of the White Fang, the proper nonviolent White Fang, but so, and it's going to show, and her passion and her love for her team and for Beacon and for the world and her kind, all that, just her love is going to shine through so brightly that Ilya went, I have to stop this. My turn.
Yeah. I guess the question is whether or not Ilya will be swayed as well.
I think that's going to take a lot more doing.
Yeah, because she points out very valid, like, it's the reason why there is a violent splinter of the White Fang in the first place. It's not just a power dynamic thing. It's they're dealing with real oppression.
I mean, humans laughed when her parents died. That's messed up.
That's really awful.
And the sun is slightly warm.
It's kind of terrible. Is there anything else you guys want to say about this this press conference sort of segment?
I love Gira's little half glasses.
He's adorable.
He's an old kitty.
He's a big old kitty cat. I love how, like, Sun, like, patted him on the shoulder. Aw. They're like, the subplot of their bromance is just a delightful sort of segment of this.
Dadmance.
Sun's like, we're buddies. And Gira's like,
Did you ever talk to me or my daughter ever again?
But thank you. I also really love, like,
Nia-chan in chat says son-in-law.
Oh, you.
That's pretty much it.
I love it.
I just want to also say how, like, Gira pacing back and forth, like, right before having to do a speech, like, oh, that feel. So really enjoyed that. All right, let's switch gears and talk about Weiss a little bit in this episode, because she comes face to face with who we've been speculating is the Spring Maiden. And man, if I don't
Vesper.
Love her. I love
what?
Her. Is, that's her name?
Yeah.
Vernal.
Vernal. Oh, God. Where did I get Vesper?
Vernal. Yeah.
Good to know.
Which
I watched the episode like 3 times and I still didn't catch it.
Of the Spring. So yeah. I think this is who we're looking for.
Yeah, I feel like that's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
If the opening wasn't any indication, then yeah, I feel like that's probably a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So
that tattoo, though, I'm just not over it.
She is gorgeous, and
don't I get one just like it?
I have zero tattoos. That's going from like
that's
zero to 100.
Yeah. That's a tall order. A
couple of sessions.
Let me
for
get
that
the stereotypical butterfly on my ankle before we go crazy, all right?
But since this is the first time we're actually getting to see her on screen, what were your initial impressions of this lovely young maiden?
Yes, please.
Yes.
She's not who she seems to be.
Ooh.
There was a moment where Weiss was talking to her with the confidence that Weiss do. And there was a moment where she wasn't just like listening and taken aback, but she had a quick look of the eyes of something, of thinking about something. I think it was after, it's like, you're going to ransom me back to my father, aren't you? So something about Weiss, something about human trafficking, something about a father, something about something.
Probably
got to her.
The ransoming back to father, if we're going with the idea that she's family to Leo in some capacity.
Yeah. And
I didn't even hear that.
I really like the personality that we're seeing from her, this very confident young woman who, you know, seems very in control of the situation. Maybe it's... I like what you were saying, that there's like a hint of something more. We know that in her past, she ran away. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of the personality that we're seeing is this brave front that she's putting on.
It's Raven. It's something that Raven instilled into her,
like,
which
can't
is this
let
is
other people see weakness.
Yes. And I don't necessarily mean that. I don't mean to imply that she's like inherently weak, but that through her engagements with Team Ruby, she's going to find her strength, what her actual strength is. And like, she's the damn Spring Maiden. What the hell does she need Weiss's sword for? You know, just to taunt
it's
her
pretty.
With?
It is very pretty.
It's pretty, but it's got all of that dust in it. It's a highly combustible, regardless. But it's one of those things where I think we have an opportunity to see a new character come into her own.
It's also well made, and I can see her either planning on using it or planning on selling it.
Mm.
Because that is a huntress's weapon, and those probably fetch real high prices.
I feel like, I mean, she's the Spring Maiden, but, you know, sometimes it's just nice to have nice things. And it's a really cool sword.
Amber had a weapon.
Well, she had a
Amber
sweet,
was ganged up on real badly, but
sweet
Amber
Gandalf,
had a weapon.
Sweet Gandalf staff.
Yes,
she did. Mm. But yeah, I feel like it's not so much that the like actually holding onto the sword is important. That's just part of her power play. Like, she's just holding onto it to taunt Weiss.
You're
she doesn't
defenseless.
Need a sword.
What she considers a like she doesn't know Weiss, so what she might consider, hey, this is your source of power, and I have it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if. You know, the Schnee family is a very well-renowned family, but Weiss as an heiress, you know, I don't feel like her combat prowess is really well-known. She's the singer of the family. Mm. She's like,
she's
you know.
She's the performer.
Mm. Yep. And so Weiss, you know, brings up like, oh yeah, you totally want to ransom me off to my dad. And she makes a gamble. and says, just wait until my sister finds out. And I feel like if we rewind back to the beginning of this volume, back to that character short, you know, Winter's words, I'm not always going to be around to save you, kind of feel like this whole plot point was all about that.
Ready to Kill in chat says, instead of Winter's coming, Winter's leaving.
Winter's gone. Oh, no.
Spring's here.
I didn't think about that. The importance of I'm not always going to be around there to save you seemed like always a physical thing, but when it comes to this, it fits perfectly.
Yeah, and here's the question though: is that actually true? Would Winter have followed order? Like, because we have no idea if Winter knew that Weiss was on her way.
If that's the case, then of course she would follow orders.
I think Winter is a high profile enough figure that if she went rogue, people would notice. She's Ironwood's right hand. Like, you notice when people don't follow orders, when they leave, she's too high profile to just leave like that.
Yeah.
And she didn't know Weiss was on her way. That was a bluff that failed. Through no fault of Weiss's own. I mean, she tried. But you don't get a lot of news when you're on a smuggling ship.
Well, and also, we brought it up time and time again, like, the communication networks are down, so it would have been very difficult to send word ahead of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have, you know, yeah, sending a letter probably would have gotten there, like, a week too late.
Maybe.
Well, and chat's been talking about, you know, why didn't Weiss say anything about, oh, you know, I'm on the outs with my dad, I didn't, because they'd probably kill her. Let's be real. She is in a cage instead of being in the ground because they have a use for her. Vernal makes that very clear. Like, we don't usually traffic in humans, but for you, we'll make an exception. Like, oh yeah, that's the only reason I'm alive. Probably better not tell him I've been disowned.
Counterpoint, though, like, she could... It's interesting, because like I said, she was making a gamble either way. She could have told them, yeah, sorry, my dad's not going to pay for me. You guys are wasting your time. Or, you know, oh, it's fine, my sister will save me. She rolled the dice with both of those things. Both of those things she believes are true. Now, here's the other thing. Would her dad actually pay the ransom just to avoid a scandal?
Yeah, maybe.
I think you would make, like... There would be a press conference afterwards, like, oh, these bandits, like, this awful, terrible rich person thing. But also, on top of that, I think, I wonder now if her escape plan, we see at the end of this, her escape plan is to have her knight involved in, like, do something and be around. I thought it looked like she was going to, like, cut off her cuffs, but I don't know. Either way, have the knight do something. Was this just a way to buy time for that? So that she could operate on her own.
I definitely buy that. Like, I definitely think that, because she used it, and I imagine that a new technique like that for her takes a lot of energy, and she just survived not only a giant wasp grim battle,
but a plane crash.
But also a plane crash. So, yeah, she's probably just biding her time.
That is, speaking of, we were just talking about mail. How does the mail work with those, like... With those Grimm guarding the skies.
I mean, it's entirely possible that the ship that was calling for help was a carrier ship with a bunch of UPS packages, and there are lots of people in Mistral who are sitting there waiting to get their Amazon orders, and they'll never come.
It's possible that they were also smugglers, and it's possible that legitimate ships either avoid that route entirely and take a little more time because they don't have to hide, or they hire huntsmen and huntresses to be on board for the express purpose of, please keep the wasps off us.
I think it's you know, you make a good point. I think it's the first one, because why else would this private trafficker that Weiss was traveling with take that route unless it was one that was populated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And when
less
he hears
patrolled because it's dangerous.
When he hears someone on the radio, he's like, I'm just going to move around that.
We're not supposed to be here.
Shoot. Gotta go. Can't help.
But if they're distracted by those other people, we might be okay, which is horrifying, but real pragmatic.
Kill them all.
Well, any other thoughts on Weiss's predicament, meeting the Spring Maiden, and on what role Winter could possibly play later on down the road?
I'm just waiting to see where this goes. We've put a lot of we've set up a lot of dominoes for this one, but we haven't knocked the first one over yet.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens next episode.
Yeah,
Well, also because we've gone a couple of, like, this episode we didn't see anything from Yang, so I wonder if next episode we're not going to see anything from Blake, or we're not going to see anything, hopefully not from Yang again, but from Weiss or
from
whatever,
Ruby
or from Ruby, because like. Just give us all four lines of the same episode, man, folks.
We miss Team Ruby being together, so yeah. It would be delightful if they could all come back together. So before we move on, I want to talk to you guys really quickly about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to the iTunes store to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. And in the iTunes store, it is now Rooster Teeth Reviews, not the Ruby After Show. So going to the iTunes store and leaving a comment makes it more searchable for people who are trying to look for this sort of content. So guys, it really does mean the world to us. And if you do leave a comment, you will get a special shout out on the show.
Yes, you do. Like this one. And I will say one extra note, just in terms of searchability. If you just look up Rooster Teeth in the podcast store, it's Rooster Teeth Podcast, Rooster Teeth Reviews. So that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll never top the Rooster Teeth Podcast because it's a really popular podcast.
because it's the Rooster Teeth Podcast.
The GD Rooster Teeth Podcast. But let's give a shout out here. We got a new comment on Wednesday from Vivamort V or Vivamort 5. Love the hosts. They seem into the series and always are fun to listen to and interact with. Ruby After Show is my favorite AfterBuzz TV after show by far.
Boy, I'd hope we're into the series. Otherwise, we'd all be real lost.
I like the one where Caboose did the gravity spell and Panic's reference.
I liked when they all went into the dream world.
Well, I mean, that one, it's on there. I guess both those are on there. Anyway, 1-800-MAGIC. Gone.
There's blood everywhere.
We have
vampire dentist.
We already have Yu-Gi-Oh cards.
I was gonna say,
nice.
I need to give a special shout out
happy.
To Joel Gutman on Twitter.
Yu-Gi Oscar from from Malachroma. Thanks,
that's
Mal.
Delightful. But with the
that's my newest phone background. Congratulations, you've replaced
just
Voltron.
Nervously fumbling with the Millennium Puzzle.
I'm gonna go ahead and read this off because it's hilarious.
Oh.
When this card is normal summoned, you may search the deck for another hunter or huntress monster card and add it to your hand. As long as the card remains face up on the field, increase attack and defense of all hunter and huntress monsters by 300 points. And then there's a follow-up by Jeff on Twitter.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
G_OFF2886. You have to sacrifice a pyra to player.
It's a special summon. Normally I'd ask if we could get Monster Reborn on this.
But it's illegal in tournament play now.
Why can't we make it illegal in tournament play? So make sure to go to #RWBYABTV to see them arts. And also, send if you have any fun stuff, send it there. That's where we see it and we talk about it on the show.
We check the hashtag all week long, guys. So
that crosses a line. Master Muffin 105. Thanks. Thanks, Gillis.
You guys are the best.
I love you
this
all.
This is so great. Kind of moving on to the next sort of aspect of the story, the Oscar and Ozpin sort of situation. We do have a question on Twitter. What about the little Rose Garden Ruby / Oscar moment? And we'll talk about that, I suppose. I feel like he needs maybe in a couple years. But that's me. I do think it's cute.
I think he's too bewildered by literally everything right now to do anything.
He's a sweet boy.
He is a sweet summer child.
Were they specifically talking about episode 3?
They were talking about episode three. Because there's this moment where, I think they were talking about episode 3, but there's this moment where she smiles at him and he seems to lose all of his words.
It's because he's a prepubescent boy.
He's been raised on a farm.
Fair.
I don't know how many girls he talks to
outside of his family. Last time
he
got a look from that, it was a cow. So he's a very confused young boy. Little baby Oscar.
Now, yeah, okay, so we get this sort of Yu-Gi-Oh-esque moment, and we find out some very interesting things about Ozpin and his current situation. What do we think about him straight up saying that he's cursed by the gods?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised with this. I wouldn't be surprised if that's actually his semblance, if he played the lottery and got the worst semblance ever. Hmm. Well, or if he actually straight up was cursed.
Well, he said he was cursed because he didn't take care of Salem the first time. He failed to project he failed to project a giant head, but second of all, he was cursed to his words were he's cursed to protect Remnant after failing to stop Salem the first time.
Or it could just be that he has reincarnation and he's read it as that.
Possibly, but that's what he said, and as a millennial old being, he's a literal millennial, but I wonder...
And the Yu-Gi-Oh! References continue.
I wonder if then, if his semblance is less of his power, but imparting it. Or if that never mind, that's kind of a spoiler for another show. So I'll say it this way. What if it's like the opposite of Rogue from the X-Men, where instead of getting a power, he imparts power? Or he got that from one of his reincarnations. How many semblances does he have?
Oh.
Because he talked about how a semblance... No, I didn't. Never mind.
Holy cow.
We're going into next episode, and I'm pretty sure I twigged on which spoiler and which show you were talking about.
Yeah, there you go.
he mentioned
but
muscle
memory. But
that's
not specifically mentioned. I was just going to reference it.
He mentioned muscle memory and everything like this. So, that's an interesting thought of, we know he says specifically he's collected memories from each of his, for lack of a better word, I guess, hosts, that he's basically a collection of all of their memories, as well as one body dies and he goes into another body. I'm wondering if maybe his power was astral projection, and he astral projected right before he died and then just sort of possessed another person, and that's now his life forever and
this
ever.
This is my life now.
Forever and ever. But when I looked at this, I was very much reminded, did either of you watch season 3 of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Half of it. I got through the Ghost Rider part. And
that was season 4.
That was season 4.
There was, there was a villain in, I won't go into details, but it was basically an alien entity that would hop from body to body. Mm. Very similar. It would kill its host, but it would retain all of their memories. And so as it kept hopping from body to body, it would recall things from previous hosts that it inhabited. And it was really creepy and unsettling. And that's my main question here, is that knowing that Ozpin, hops from body to body, and that eventually his and Oscar's souls will merge, what's going to happen to freaking Oscar?
He will become one with the conglomerate.
Is he okay with that?
I don't know if he realizes it.
I don't think it's a choice.
I think there's going to be a moment.
He's still there in the conversation, though.
And he mentions it, but I don't know if they've, even though long trade right and all, I don't know if they've had that conversation yet.
By the way, I can
only imagine him.
You will be assimilated.
Resistance is futile.
Borgpin.
And that nice little Shannon McCormick voice. Resistance is futile.
Yo, it's his color is green, so there is that. But I can only imagine Ozpin taking the body hostage, so to speak, and saying our consciousness eventually become one. And Oscar in the back going, yo, what?
Wait, I wasn't listening. You want to run that one by me again?
Say again.
I don't remember agreeing to this.
Those are... I mean, you're speaking metaphorically, right? No?
And we have Hero in chat saying, does this mean that if they defeat Salem, that Oscar or Ozpin will die? I'm pretty sure Ozpin really wants to shuffle off this mortal coil at this point. Mm. He sounds like he's tired.
Yeah, I mean, he's said it time and time again that he's made more mistakes than any man, woman, or child alive. And if he's been alive for a millennia, he's had the time.
I mean, Spider's Ozpin is a statistical outlier and should not be counted.
But, I mean, it doesn't change his tally. But it's a good thing that we have Ozpin back, because we do get this fountain of information. And we get sort of somebody else to kind of side by side with Crow go, something about this Leo situation doesn't sit right.
And I will say, last week, I know I made that quote prediction, but I did say that before episode 3 came out, and I was like, yes, I
knew it. we all know that something is wrong here.
Yeah. I'm excited that we're going to be getting some one-shot, essentially some one-shot, I was going to say Guardians, Huntsmen and Huntswomen and Huntresses from whatever dark corner of Mistral Crow's going to get them from. Heroes for Hire. Oh, if we get like a kung fu dude and a big black dude with a chain for a belt,
yes.
I'm so into it. Yes, and they can please. Do it better. They can do it better.
Be great. Yes, please.
They can do half of that better. The kung fu Fair. Half.
Yeah, the kung fu half.
Yeah, that's not a high bar.
Yeah, no, it's not. The other one is a really high bar.
It's like when people pre-cut wood to like chop through. That's the equivalent of what Iron Fist was. Anyway.
For those of you who didn't quite get what we were throwing shade at.
A lot of Marvel tonight.
I guess kind of talking about that, the whether or not, you know, finding, assembling a team of huntsmen to go after the Spring Maiden and getting Jean and Ruby into shape. Which I appreciated that comment about, like, you still need to work on hand-to-hand combat, and that reminder that Jean still hasn't activated his semblance. Mm-hmm. That's still a huge plot point that I hope gets some sort of payoff by the end of this season.
Oh, yeah.
If they're like, hey, remember? I think at the very least, by the end of the season, maybe we'll get a flash of it. A hint of it without him knowing... How did I do that? I don't know what I did. How did I do that?
I feel like end of the arc. I feel like we might be... Oh, wow.
Right before he dies? It's the end of the arc.
I wasn't planning on that pun, but I will own it. I mean, like, three-volume arcs. So I feel like end of season 6 would be the latest that we'd get that.
Would it be considered ironic if his semblance was fire?
Huh. I think it would be ironic if they were all made of iron. Sorry, wrong show. But I have things to say next week. I have things to say next week.
Oh, I think we all do.
For sure. Do we want to, in terms of a potential romance, just because people are talking about it in the hashtag and there was a chat about it earlier in the live chat, what are the odds of a potential romance between Ruby and Oscar?
Ugh, sorry.
On the one hand, I think it's cute that
that's a voyeur you don't want.
I feel like it's cute that he has a little bit of a schoolboy crush. They are closer in age because, remember, Ruby got bumped up a couple grades. Mm-hmm. So they're closer in age than one would think. So I feel like in a couple of years it would be acceptable if he didn't have an old wizard hanging out in his brain.
Yeah, that's the killer there. That's it.
It's a little bit of a romance killer.
That he was eventually going to merge with. Like, because, yeah. Can you just see dating advice with Ozpin?
Yes.
Just giving a running commentary, and Oscar just like, can you not?
How do I ask her out? Oh, that's not a thing that's going to happen. She is out of your league.
Oscar, you're like a 2.
She's like a 7, and she's working on it.
And it makes
she's
me...
She's a 7, and she's not fully trained yet.
I am at least an 8. And I don't know what
like
she heard
that. Like, she can hear that?
It's like she turns into Nikki and suddenly has mental communication of some way, shape, or form. But Caitlin, good friend Caitlin, Ruby Chibi idea.
Ooh.
Oh, Chibi Oscar's going to be adorable.
Oh,
he's going to be a little cutie. Oh.
I mean, he already is adorable, but
yeah,
this is just
gonna
like
have a giant head,
big old eyes.
Chibi Oscar dog sitting's why.
Oh, that's no. Just that's too much cute in one little mini episode.
Well, you know why it would be a little hellion and then just be the nicest, most behaving thing when Ruby gets back.
Oh, the sketch writes itself. All right.
It does.
All right. Do we have any final thoughts regarding Team Ruby or Team Rangers sort of story arc in this episode?
I just really appreciated the impressive leaps on the chair. I'll train you. Oh, wait, I'm out of time. And there goes the chair. Mm-hmm. Just the whole gag was beautiful. Appreciate that.
Nora's reaction to cute Oscar was pretty fantastic. Please don't call me that. I like how Ozpin acknowledged, hey, Ruby, John, y'all need some help. Two in the middle, you're fine.
You guys are great.
You've been through some stuff. You're all right.
Don't change a thing.
Nah, you keep doing
you
it.
You just keep being you.
Keep doing it.
I mean, I was talking with Crow, and I heard about the giant horror horse. Like, yeah.
Okay, but could you imagine him recalling that story, like, with a poison hangover? Just like, I saw these shapes.
Talking about, like, little details. I love the cup of coffee that he has. It's like, okay, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. But Ozpin speaks drunken Crow. So,
he's like, oh, you mean a Nuklevi? Ah, I see.
Oh, those are rare creatures.
I'm still hoping that we'll get some form of astral projected giant head before the end, or before the merging is complete.
I'd say we're heading in that direction.
Oh, dude, when Oscar finally confronts Salem, and it's just like, who are you? Giant Ozpin head, and
you
then it,
called?
Yeah, something really dumb like that. I'm a big fan of it.
My only final thought on this story is, again, I want to give a shout out to the vocal performance because, man, he has his Shannon McCormick down. It was very well done. Wonderful performances all around.
But also the editing of
the sound mixing.
The mixing of when Shannon came through, and it was the super important parts, and I think that I wonder, like, if they're like, no joking, like, joking aside, I should say that if there are moments when Oz is going to come through a lot stronger, that will change or accelerate Oscar's growth. Possibly. or certain things, just because of the sheer immensity of the emotion.
I also worry about, you know, before their souls become one, I worry about when they're on different pages. If,
oh yeah,
you know, Oscar relinquished the controls this time around, what if it gets to a point where Oscar doesn't want to do something and Ozpin straight up rips the controls out of his hands?
Is that even possible?
I would bet it is. That's just a guess, but I don't like thinking about where that goes.
I had a lot of trouble with the, like you were saying, the sound mixing, but every time we had that overlay, I'm like, and we're in horror movie territory. Back to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Things, every time someone has a double voice in that show, bad things are happening.
But I love it so much.
I don't want Oscar to go to the Shadow Realm.
Played way too much Kingdom Hearts to ever trust a double voice, because that means there's a Xehanort somewhere.
Would the Shadow Realm in this world be the Dragon Continent? Salem just hanging out in the Shadow Zone all this time?
Yes. In the zone. Shadow Zone!
All right. Do we have any quick... We are running out of time. Do we have any quick rapid-fire predictions for
your
the weeks to come?
AfterBuzz TV predictions.
I mean, we've all kind of seen the next episode, so...
Wait, have we all kind of, or have we all seen it?
We've all seen it.
Okay, we've all seen it.
So...
Long-term predictions.
Long-term predictions. Any long-term predictions?
I hope we don't go too long until we see what's happening in Menagerie, and hopefully we're not getting a civil war in Menagerie before anybody has a chance to go to Mistral.
I have nothing. I agree with all of that. I should have something clever to add, but I don't, so I'm just gonna agree.
I hope Menagerie gets woke. For sure. I can't wait to see what the repercussions of the death of Sienna Khan is going to have. It's going to be interesting. And I'm going to really appreciate it when we get more out of literally everybody that we've met, particularly the Spring Maiden, because I am intrigued as heck. All right. That does it for this week's episode, you guys. Again, go to iTunes if you haven't already done so. Rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love you guys. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias, as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you want to see Megan and I react to these Ruby episodes, those videos will be up at some point in my life, because I'm also doing NaNoWriMo with that same name on the Nano site. Friend me there.
Okay, and
okay.
On the internet's Mark Budonica. You can find me on all things at Mark Budonica. I just put up a what are they called? A journal on a post on the RT site that's talking about some stuff that we might be able to do here. Let us know. It's just got some more information, stuff that we say here, and some stuff that we don't say here. But if we have a group on the RT site, it's ABTV Rooster Team. Join us there if you have any additional questions or requests that don't come through on Twitter, or you don't want to get lost in our feed, which is ABTV Rooster Team on Twitter, or hashtag RWBYABTV, then pop them there in the group. Feel free to join. It's fun. There's a lot. There's a lot.
Yeah, if the Rooster Teeth site is your preferred method of communication, that's where you can find us.
That's a great way to put it.
It's true.
So yes, Mark Budonica, use the hashtags, follow all of us. There's some fun stuff. Thank you, Megan.
I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I am also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with 2 Ks. Be sure to check those out. Be sure to also check out The Shadow Radio Recreation Season 2, where I do the voice of Margot Lane. Don't forget to follow Patrick at P to the D's and Stacy at Stacy Shuttles. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Dust you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.